This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is BFM 89.9. You're listening to Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. With me today, two-thirds of the Pop-Up Dining KL group, Mickey and Amanda. They're here to talk about, I guess, the next step in pop-up dining, you know, the evolution of pop-up dining and where they're going with it, because they've got a business that takes them to different restaurants and they create different dining experiences for their guests. But first up, take a listen at what I've been eating around town this week. Now, if beef is part of your diet, you know, chances are you are going to be a steak lover, because for some strange reason, steak enjoys a fine long tradition in Malaysia. But long gone are the days when Victoria Station and the ship were the only places at which you can dine on a big slab of meat. These days, steaks are plentifully found around, especially the Klang Valley. And here are some of the best available today. In the cheap and cheerful corner, the institution that is Susie's Corner reigns supreme. The steaks here are served with lashings of sauce, chips and greens on the sides. They also have strangely tandoori, pleasingly crispy yet fluffy roti, murtabak, satay and naans. But if you like your steak, then Susie's is a time-tested bet. I would also strongly suggest that you order your meat less done than you usually prefer, because the steaks are served on sizzling hot plates and, as you can imagine, will continue to cook after being set on the table for some time. Best of all, there's also beer to wash it all down. Susie's Corner is located at 213/26 in Jalan Ampang Batu, 4.5 in Jalan Ulu Klang, and it's open daily from 5:30 p.m. to 5 a.m. In the mid-range corner, there's Lucky Bow in Jalan Bangkong Bangsa. And Lucky Bow serves a bit of a melange, you know, of food, from chicken rice and nasi lemak to burgers and steamboat. But come dinner time, the steaks take center stage, and rightfully so. It's some of the best I've enjoyed in KL, especially at the extremely competitive price points that Lucky Bow offers. The steaks at Lucky Bow are cooked in one of KL's few Yospa ovens, and they come from Margaret River in Australia and in Sanchoku in Japan, and they have an average marbling score of 5 to 6, which is very respectable. You can also expect to pay about 125 ringgit for a 300 gram slab of ribeye, which, if you're a steak lover, you'll know is almost incredibly good value. At the Lucky Bow, you should try the tomahawk. It's a must order. It's exquisitely charred on the outside, delectably medium rare on the inside, and the marbling and the rendered fat, which to me is the best part of eating steak, is irreproachably done. Best of all, the price is half that of hotels, so you can expect to pay 400 ringgit for a 1.2 to 1.3 kilo slab. When you think about all that, there's very little not to like about the steaks there. Get thyself there pronto for a fabulous slab of meat. Lucky Bow is located at 65 Jalan Bangkong in Bangsa. It's open daily from noon to 10 p.m. The phone number there is 03-2092-1222. And remember, the steaks are only available at dinner time. Also using the Yospa for their steaks is the Mandarin Grill at MO. Taking over from where the Pacifica used to be, the Mandarin Grill has a standard Blackmore Wagyu, which scores an off-the-scale 10+ on the marbling rating. They've also got the Black Angus from Australian various cuts. But I would say that the indisputable crowd favourite has to be the hay-smoked Wagyu ribeye that's served with double-baked cheese souffle and black truffle jus for a more-is-more amazing dish. Even though the beef marbling notches in at a relatively modest 6 only, it provides a great balance of lean to fat, and it's definitely one of the best venues for steak fine dining in Kuala Lumpur. In fact, I would venture to say that Mandarin Oriental's Mandarin Grill steaks are the yardstick by which other steakpreneurs should measure themselves. Mandarin Oriental is located at Jalan Pinang in KLCC. It's open daily from noon to 2:30 p.m. for lunch, and for dinner from 7 to 10:30 p.m. Finally, singing the myriad gospels of dry-aged beef are Korean partners Danny Choi and JK, and they import fresh beef from Australia, and then they dry-age it in a hanging cellar for a couple of weeks to get the meat's natural juices completely sealed in before they cook it. Their ribeye in particular is stunningly executed. Order it medium rare, because the complexity of the beef has been perfectly retained while dispelling all vestiges of gaminess. Yum! Beto's beef is best enjoyed with a side of their special grilled sweet corn. And Beto is located at Publica 1 in Jalan Duta Mas 1. It's open from Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. to midnight, and on the weekends from noon to midnight. With me today, two-thirds of the Pop-Up Dining KL group, Mickey and Amanda, with Daniel missing conspicuously so, but I'm sure the ladies will more than lead the charge. Now, I guess the first question that anyone would want to ask is, how did you come about with that idea?
Okay, well, basically, it was a really random, like a really random day. So we were actually catching up together and we were sitting in Justin Cakes, and so happened Daniel got back from Italy and he's like, oh, like, I really cooked a lot of things in Italy, I tried a lot of things, and I really want to serve a dinner, like, from what inspired me in Italy. And then he's like, oh, okay, well, I can help you serve your food. And Nikki's like, oh, yeah, I can help you do marketing and stuff. And so happens, like, Jesslyn was working on a day, and we just asked, hey, Jesslyn, your spot looks perfect for a nice dinner for maybe a 5-course. And then she's like, yeah, sure, why not? So we just got, like, we're like, okay, let's just do it then.
So it's actually very spontaneous, yep. And very organic.
Very spontaneous.
In terms of the business, Daniel obviously is a chef, as are you both, right?
Yes, correct.
You're both KDU alumni, as we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Both graduates from, well, Darren Teo, who is no stranger to the show, has been a guest for many times.
Yeah.
And you graduated from his course.
Yeah, we're actually all classmates as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, we all graduated from the same.
And judging from your looks, you probably only graduated probably like last week, right? You all look very young. So in terms of the job roles, who does what in any pop-up dining that you create?
Okay, so basically Daniel is the head chef. So he creates develop most of the menu. But sometimes we brainstorm. So Amanda mostly takes like dessert part and I take snack parts. But sometimes it can come all from Daniel. So
yeah.
There's the menu part. And then operation-wise, so there's my part. Starting from how we market the event and then how we handle all the social media.
From and marketing then, to like planning everything.
Yeah, planning, reservation, and then booking the venue, securing the venue. And then on the day itself, Amanda will take care of the service, the front house. So that's how we divide our roles.
Now, I mean, the adage that too many cooks spoil the broth comes to mind. When you have three people versus one running an event, there's bound to be an overlap or a dissension, a difference of opinion. Mm-hmm. How do you guys make sure that that doesn't happen?
Usually, mostly during when we have our service, we will always have a briefing before that. I think it comes a lot with understanding and give and take. Especially if you have partners working with you. And we kind of like already segregate like what we're going to do on that day so then we don't clash like in any cooking or serving.
Yeah, that's why Daniel will always be in charge in the kitchen.
I will handle like the service, but if he needs help in the kitchen, then yeah. So we help each other as well. But focusing on the main role like kitchen and then service. Operations.
But all three of you being originally, doing a chefing course, do you ever miss not getting to cook and do the menu in the pop-ups?
No. For me, right, actually, we take turn. There is a one time that I designed the whole menu. There is like sometimes dessert part.
Yeah, I will design it. So
Amanda will design the whole menu. So it's like, but most of the time, we let Daniel do that.
So the thing about pop-up dining is you go to someone else's premises, you take it up and you set it up and you create your own dining experience there. When you've got a business that takes you from different restaurants to different restaurants all the time, how do you make sure that your vision is cohesive, that it doesn't become too chop and change, so it becomes diluted?
Actually, usually if we were to pop up in new places, we definitely would go and visit the place beforehand to get to like see how they work and where are things placed, how they operate. So from then we observe and like we sort of like know how they work. So when we actually take over their premises, we don't interrupt with what they will do. We just take one side and we try to do all our work there. So that because sometimes like restaurants, they actually operate their businesses when we have a pop-up as well. So from then on, like we just mind our own cooking and then we try not to like move about too much and try to work with the space we have, which is quite challenging, but it's doable.
So since that fateful day at Jesslyn Cakes, you've had a number of pop-ups since then.
Yes. Correct.
What would you say has been one of the most memorable pop-ups for you? As a company, as a group?
I would say the first pop-up would be the most memorable one. It's no pressure. It's just like we, with our cooking, and we just serve the guests. Yeah, so the first pop-up will be the most memorable.
I think it was like really something really different that we were serving to people on that first day.
We're definitely going to come back to the menu afterwards, later on, when we talk about the food that you cook. But I think, do you think it's maybe because the first time you do it, you don't really know what you're letting yourself in for, so there's no pressure in that sense. You're just coasting along, just doing what comes naturally to you.
Yeah,
and the more you do it, the more you start to think, oh, yeah, hang on, should we consider this? Should we consider that?
We know what to expect already, so that's why.
So on a regular basis, how many pop-ups do you tend to do and how frequently?
We try to do at least once a month, but before, like after we just graduated and Daniel came back, we did more frequently because we had more time. So we actually did about three times.
It can be like three times. Sometimes it can be 0 times a month. It depends on our availability as well.
Because we also have day jobs, so this is like a side project for us.
So the day jobs takes precedence, sadly.
Yeah.
And what do you guys do during the day?
I still work full-time in a restaurant, in one of the restaurants in KL Central.
Yeah. Because I actually work with my family, and family owns the restaurant as well.
Your family owns the restaurant as well? Okay. Mm. What restaurant does your family own?
They have one in SS15 called Go Chili, if you heard of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just help them out with managing.
So knowing the business like you do, because your family owns the restaurant, what are some important lessons that you brought into your own pop-up dining business that you've learned from running your family's business?
I think there's a lot of being prepared, like, managing wise, and also customer service, like to know what makes customer happy and how to make sure that they are satisfied with their food and service that we have. So that's what I think is most important, which I applied from my parents' shop to pop-up dining.
I remember there was a time when pop-up dining was all the rage in KL. Everyone was doing it. You know, they were doing it in bicycle shops, they were doing it in underground restaurants, they were doing it everywhere. And that was very hot at the time because everybody liked it, everybody wanted to jump on that bandwagon. Do you find that that train has passed a little bit and it's a struggle to keep that whole pop-up dining dynamic alive?
Yes, actually, doing pop-up is quite tiring. It requires a lot of passion and determination. So for people who just want to play and they just want to have fun, they can just do it one or twice. So after that, it's enough for them because physically it's very demanding because you have to bring everything to the spot. Yeah, a lot of things to be
considered
for, when you do the pop-up on one day. Mm-hmm. So it can be quite tiring. I think the thing that keeps us going is because it's a passion. We really, really do this because of passion.
And also because, like, for us, the world is ever-changing, which complies with our brand as well. Pop-up Dining KL is ever-changing and it's always new and we always get inspiration every day. Like, even, like, today or maybe tomorrow, we go somewhere, we get inspired, and that's how we keep our pop-up dining in KL going.
And the three of us, we love traveling.
Yeah.
And then we travel once, three of us, to Penang, and then we go there like a gastronomic trip, makan-makan. Yeah. So it's very fun to do. And then Amanda and Daniel actually went to backpacking to Europe last year.
So we got a lot of ideas.
Like 1.5 months, right?
Yeah, 1.5 months.
So, it's like we would love to travel, and then we would love to bring back what
ever we have and inspire us and actually put it on a plate and just serve people what we want them to try.
Wonderful. Yeah. You girls have summed it up so well because I was going to ask a question. What keeps you going? Knowing that it's so hard and so challenging, what keeps you going? And the fact that the passion that you have for it is fantastic. And I love the fact that you can tap out all your experiences back from overseas and then share it with the diners here in KL. So that's great. Yeah. Next up, we're going to be talking about some of the food that Pop-Up Dining KL serves. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. You're listening to Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. In the studio with me, the ladies from Pop-Up Dining KL, talking about, obviously, pop-up dining. We've shared, you know, why you guys got into it and why you continue to do it, even though it can be quite challenging at times. Now let's talk a little bit about the food that you cook, which is the fun bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Daniel came back from Italy. He did a bit of chefing there at various restaurants. You guys have also studied and graduated from KDU. Your family has a business, restaurant business. So all of you are no strangers to the world of food, let's just say.
Yeah.
When you decided to do this first pop-up restaurant at Jaslyn, what was the first thing that came to you? in terms of the food, what you wanted to cook?
Definitely was Italian cuisine because Daniel just got back from Italy. So that would be what we wanted to serve at that point of time. At that point, we focused a lot on the northern parts of Italy, which there's a region called Piedmonte.
Yep.
So they like to use a lot of
olive oil.
Olive oil, seafood, and a lot of herbs as well.
So take us on a little vicarious trip through that first pop-up that you did with Jesslyn. What was on the menu? What was the food that you produced?
We have the thing called banna cauda.
Yeah. It's a very...
Oh, banna cauda. Yeah, I love banna cauda.
So that is very northern Italian dish. So that's what we serve.
For the benefit of our listeners who may not be familiar with banna cauda, let's talk them through the whole appetite, the dish itself.
Yeah, okay. So basically banna cauda is a sauce. They incorporate cream.
Olive oil. And anchovy.
Anchovies.
And a lot of garlic. So they make
very pungent and a very memorable taste.
Yeah. Yes.
But for us, our style, we put some twist on it. We add bananas.
Yeah.
So it adds a little bit of sweetness. So that is our twist for our banna cauda.
So you added the banana and mashed it into the sauce.
Yes, correct.
So you had that garlicky... You had that really pungent taste and then you had suddenly had a sweet hit.
It turns out okay.
But surprisingly, our guests really find it nice and they liked it. So,
how did you come up with bananas?
That one, Daniel like decided, okay, why not I just try to put bananas inside? And it turned out pretty delicious, actually.
Really interesting twist to a very traditional, very Italian starter. Yes.
Yeah.
And for your mains, what did you have?
We have chicken. This is not very Italian. Because not everything we do on our menu will follow the Italian style, because we always infuse our own cooking style as well. Yeah. So we did like a two-way chicken. Yeah. So one is like a chicken boxing and another one is like a seared chicken. So
basically when we say two-way means we prepare like a certain meat, let's say for example the chicken, we prepare it two-way. Could be like one's baked, one is fried. So that's what we meant by two-way.
Like the traditional Chinese Kai Lan two ways.
Correct.
I think most Malaysians will understand that because they grew up with Kai Lan two ways, right? So it's like, chicken two ways, I got it. Daniel obviously has Italy in his blood. He's been through it. He's been very inspired by it. But when it comes to you guys doing your taking your turn at the helm, what sort of food do you like to produce?
For me, I learned a lot from my mother. So it's like a Hakka fusion dish. So a lot of my cooking will have a lot of Hakka
influences.
Hakka influences, yes.
And what about you?
For me, I really like to play with European and local produce. A lot of local produce.
So more fusion style.
Yeah, fusion.
Okay. So now, with that in mind, so you've got Hakka influences, you've got a fusion bent to your cooking, and Daniel is very determinately Italian. How do you make sure that your pop-up dining doesn't get confusing for diners?
Before we actually have a pop-up, we always have a theme. Like a story behind all the dishes, why we want to serve it.
Yeah, even if we're talking about the Hakka cuisine that I have done, actually I've done a series of dinner actually inspired by the Hakka dishes, but it doesn't look very Hakka because the taste,
we give it a twist,
a little bit of a Hakka taste, but it still look a bit modern. Yeah, so that's how we come up with all our dishes.
I love the sound of that whole Hakka, you know, the Hakka style of it. Can you tell me about some of the dishes you've made in the past that are, you know, Hakka influenced?
So there's one thing called a plum duck. So the sauce is very Hakka. It's using the plum sauce. And then the duck, I just see it as how we do the Western style. So there's a plum duck sauce. With the Hakka style.
So a typical starter that you would create in a Hakka influence menu would be?
Okay, so there's one. And then there's another one called pork yam. Pork yam is also very Hakka dish. So the way we serve it is like we serve with one slice of pork and then the yam, like we can kernel it.
Basically,
the presentation is just like a normal Western presentation, but then it got the Hakka taste.
I see what you're saying. So it's very deceptive. It's almost like the play on your taste buds, because you're looking, you're seeing a quenelle, you know, you're seeing these things, and then you go, okay, it's very Western, and you put it in your mouth, and you're like, whoo, that's a taste of my childhood right right?
Yes.
So I love that little, you know, little twist on it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, because like when we describe on our menu, we just give very brief like description. For example, like the Hakka dish, yam and pork, we'll just put like pork, yam, and then the name of the sauce we serve with it. But people think like, what, we're just going to serve this? But no, actually, that is just a very brief description. And actually, when we serve the dish, people be like, oh, wow, that's not just yam, pork, and sauce. It's more than that. So that's how we like to surprise our guests as well. Local cuisines, local dish, or whatever dish that inspired us, and we actually give it a twist in the serving platter to our guests.
Yeah, I love that. I love that it's a little bit cheeky, it's a little bit tricky, you know. People kept guessing, they're like, okay, yam, pork, block sauce, whatever, you know, and suddenly it's a whole delightful experience.
Yes.
Now, if you don't give so much away when you're promoting it and when you're showing them the menu, how can you get them excited about the meal? If you're keeping the cards up your sleeves, what is the tool that you use to get people to want to come to your pop-up?
I think mostly it's from our pictures.
Yeah, our photos on social media and by word of mouth. That's how we get customers wanting to like come and try our food. Because as like, for instance, if I'm a paying customer and I see a menu that just serves this, but then I look at their social, like on our social media, and the food is like, okay, this is just not three components. So it keeps me like, oh, okay, I really want to try it. Like, it's really interesting. So
yeah, so you keep them intrigued. You pique their interest by having delicious photographs that show that obviously there's more than three components on the plate,
of course.
And that gets them excited and then gets them interested to come to your event.
Yes.
Let's get them interested with a little bit of an oral and auditory experience of some of the food that you might serve. Can you share a recipe that might have been featured at one of your pop-ups?
This is a very simple recipe. It's our cured salmon. So we can use any kind of local herb to cure. Yep. The mixture of the cure is rock salt and sugar. It's an equal amount. Yep. And then the amount of the mixture is enough to cover the fish. The fillet of fish.
So, for example, if you're using 1 kg of salmon, you basically try to get 500 grams of salt, 500 grams of sugar. And then
in that mixture, we add in like a chopped garlic, chopped ginger, lemongrass, kaffir lime leaf, black pepper, corn, whatever you want. But
any kind of herbs.
Yeah, any kind of Asian herb is good.
Yeah.
So chop everything finely and then mix everything and cover the fish with that.
What's the liquid that you use?
There's no liquid.
Because in a Western curing method, you tend to use a gin or vodka to give it that infusion, that real oomph, right?
Okay.
So for an Asian one, you just literally just use rock salt, good quality rock salt and sugar in equal parts and a bunch of Asian herbs.
Yes. Yeah, whatever herbs you want.
Wow.
Yeah, but you got to make sure that your fish is really, really dry. Pat dry it with a kitchen towel, and then you lay your fish, and then you put the mixture on top. And then you cover with your second fillet of...
So that's skin side down. You lay your fish skin side down on an aluminium foil or glad wrap that you're going to wrap it in?
Not necessarily, but you can just use a really, like a big container enough to fit the fish. Yeah, skin side down. Pat dry your fish and put your mixture in the middle. And then cover it skin side up. And then you place the remaining mixture all over the fish. And then you just... cover it and cure it for a day.
In the fridge.
Yes.
With something pressing down on it, a heavy object to get the liquid, sauce
infused inside the fish.
Yep.
And then leave it one day. And then the next day, just take it out and then rinse it off with cold water. And then you're done. Pat dry and you can store it. It can be consumed anytime.
That's a very quick curing process, because whenever I make ocean trout, I tend to make ocean trout, cured ocean trout for Christmas. And we tend to cure it over a period of 2 to 3 days, because you flip it around and so that you make sure that that thing really infuses into the flesh.
Okay.
But I guess one day is also enough. Anything that has salt and sugar to cure it at any period of time really is enough to get into the meat anyway, right?
Of course.
So what do you tend to serve with your cured fish? Since it's an Asian style, probably a very lemongrassy kind of style, what do you put with the fish?
It's very versatile.
Yeah.
You can just slice it and then put on your sandwich.
For one pop-up, we actually served it with a dill emulsion. That's very Western. So we have toast and we put salmon on top and we serve the dill emulsion on the side. So like before the customers eat, we just ask them to pour it a bit and have a bite all together.
Yeah, that sounds really good. My stomach just growled. Okay, well, ladies, that's really very interesting. When is your next pop-up poised to happen?
Our next pop-up, we're actually in the midst of planning. We're looking at the 18th of March. It's going to be held in DC Mall, but the restaurant is actually under renovation right now, so can't really...
Watch this space. So it's going to be a pop-up middle of March, around the 18th, in DC Mall at a restaurant whose identity is yet to be disclosed.
Yes.
What kind of menu are you going to be looking at?
Oh, this one is interesting. It's going to be a first time we are doing. It's a collaboration with a Japanese chef. So we are doing a fusion of Italian and Japanese course meal for the one on the 18th of March.
Right, so it's going to be a Gitalian menu. Example of a dish that we can expect to find that night.
Surprise.
So not giving much away.
No.
Okay, so if anybody wants to find out about the next event, they should go and look for you at Facebook.
Or Instagram.
Pop-Up Dining KL.
Yeah, correct.
Or Instagram, also under the same handle, Pop-Up Dining KL.
Yes, correct.
Otherwise, is there an email?
The email is also the same, popupdiningkl@gmail.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, ladies, and best of luck. I'm sure I'll be trotting along to visit one of your pop-up dining clubs soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, big thank you to Mickey and Amanda from Pop-Up Dining KL. If you want to find out what the giveaways are this week, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFMFeedingTime. Alternately, you might like to follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Miss Koo. That's MISSKHOO. Till next Saturday, have yourselves a very tasty week. This has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.